Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Eternal Optimist podcast. I am your host, Matt Drinkon. Of course, I am. No one else is going to host it today. This is a special guest. I had to be here for this one today. This is a lady today by the name of Michelle Meehan, who comes referred by one of my top guests of all time, Mr. Jason Putnam. So, Michelle, first of all, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Awesome, Matt. Thanks so much for having me.
It is a real thrill to be with you. You come highly recommended. And for those of you out there who don't know Michelle, check out the show notes. She is a super high performer. She's a working mom. She's got some things that she's going to share with us today about some of the challenges, about life. I'm curious to see where the conversation goes. So let's dive in, Michelle, and let's share with the audience some stuff. So I'd like to invite you to take us back in time. If you look at your life on a timeline, and you can start today and go backwards to any time, you can go to yesterday, you can go to birth, just any time in your past, I'd love to share with the audience one or two things that have been a challenge for you in your life. And if you think about what's the hardest situations, the hardest stuff, would love to share with the audience, you know, what some of those things are so we can, you know, explore and see what we learn and the difficulty in it. Because we're looking at you now and you're successful now. You're a top performer in an organization that's worldwide famous. You're really great at what you do now, successful now, and you've overcome a lot of stuff. So love to dive back in and hear what is one point in your life that there's been something really challenging for you?
Yeah. So it's funny that you mentioned the whole top performer thing, because I feel like that for me is the impetus of what's been challenging for me. So the hardest thing for me that I think I've ever overcome is becoming a working mom. And I know that might seem like somewhat cliche, especially since you're not a woman, but you live with a lot of them.
Yes.
Let me explain a little. So like my entire life, I've been this crazy overachiever. I got straight A's, I won writing contests, then scholarships, coveted industry awards. I mean, to this day, my mom still calls me her shining star.
Oh.
But it's totally not because it's all talent. I grew up in this like extreme blue collar family where the idea of an amazing work ethic was sort of on the table every night, right alongside whatever we were eating. Just the need to work for whatever you wanted to achieve in the world. So when talent kind of eluded me a little bit, I really dove into that work ethic side and sort of challenged myself to work harder than my peers so I could shine again in my mother's eyes. Sort of knowing that reaching those pinnacles was really important to me and pivotal. And then I had my daughter, Lily, and she was
Lily? Just, you have a Lily? Oh my gosh, so do I. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God, how do you spell it?
One L, L-I-L-Y.
Me too.
Woo! All right.
So as you know, when a Lily is born, it's 100 gifts all wrapped into one, right?
Yes.
In the blink of an eye, within weeks here in the U.S., my maternity leave was over. It was time to return to work. And at the time, I lived in New Jersey, Central Jersey, and I worked in Manhattan at one of the world's most renowned media companies. And I was like obsessed with Lily, right?
Yes.
I was so eager to get back to work and back to using my brain and feeling like my own person again.
Yes.
But the thing was, I wasn't that person anymore.
Yes.
Turned to work someone completely different than who I'd been. So. Yeah. I had always sort of focused on bettering myself, making it further than anyone thought I could, and sort of vying always for that next big prize. And suddenly I was split right down the middle. I was like two distinct individuals. Like on this side, I was Michelle and like the Michelle I'd always been. And on this side, I was Lily's mom. And yet somehow we were like sewn together into this single body and sort of like being in this one body made it impossible to ever be the overachiever I always was in either role simultaneously.
Yes.
I was always giving one more than the other, constantly feeling guilty and not that I was ever epic at either. And so I'll take you to like this one specific day. It was early in my working mom days. I am in the restroom at work and I get a text from my babysitter and she lets me know that Lily is running a slight fever but not to worry because she's tending to her and she feels like it's probably just a little virus. And my boss at the time happened to walk into the bathroom like moments after I get this text, right? And here I am, hysterical crying. And she's like, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I'm like, "Lily has a fever." And she's like thinking the kid's dying, right? But that's totally not what's happening. And I just said to her, you know, I just can't do it. I can't bear being two people who are never good enough. And wow. I hated that I was this person who got back from the city after bedtime, who picked up her sleeping baby from her crib and sobbed into her footy pajamas, apologizing for missing the entire day, you know? But then also at the same time, I hated that I was the person that like left the minute the clock struck five, because I knew that there was possibility of hitting traffic on the way home and like missing bedtime again. I was sort of like crippled with this sadness, and this sadness has returned many times throughout the years, as I'm sure it has for like many working moms. In that immediate time frame, I sort of had no choice but to deal with it, right? Because I had to work. I had inherited work ethic, but not millions.
Yes,
I had created a lucrative career for myself in media. And to be in media, I had to be in Manhattan. So I did the best I could in both realms. I won Marketer of the Year, and I tried to make the most of every weekend with my family. I got my MBA. I memorized all of the words to Let It Go.
Yes. That's good.
I resigned myself to the fact that I was always going to be these two people. Mm-hmm. But then something changed after I had my son. He's a Dylan with a Y. I don't know if you have one of those.
No, I got girls, all girls. Okay. Lily and Dylan. All right. Okay.
I was able to keep that two-person facade going for a little bit, but around the time he turned three, something inside me like broke. The hamster wheel I'd been running on for like the 5 years seemed kind of to only lead to darkness. Even if I received success at work or received success and positive feedback at home, I just could not see the light. And that sadness turned to an epically deep depression. That I like despised the mother I was. I despised the people at work who side-eyed me when I left at five to make the nearly 2-hour commute home. Like I totally, Matt, lost my spark.
Wow.
And it was like no amount of that hard work ethic that was going to help me reignite it. And I struggled for a while because I kind of felt like in this lock of this is my life. I'm in media. I'm successful. I don't know what to do. But I knew that I had to make a change and I had to somehow get closer to home.
Okay. So if I could pause for a second and insert this, because I'm viscerally feeling what you're sharing, because I'm not a mom, obviously. As a dad, I went through something very similar. And my wife also went through something similar. And it led to a complete change in her career. You know, so you're sharing something that's very relatable. And I know that our audience, this is very relatable to a number of the people that we had that listen to the show. So I just wanted to share that. Very relatable. Was there an exact moment that you could pinpoint in Dylan's third year where it was like, now it's broken? Is there a moment, or can you go back to that time when you realized that there was a depression? What was that like, that transition into that?
Yeah. So there was sort of, I would say like a slow burn build, right?
Yeah.
And I think what was really, I don't know, a catalyst in sort of that moment was like, he was becoming a person. Like you have kids, you know, they're like these funny little toddlers and they toddle around. And then all of a sudden I was missing two people's lives, whole things about their lives. Like he was coming home from daycare and telling me about things that had happened. And I was never there to pick him up. And I missed the Mother's Day tea. And it was just like, no matter what, I was missing. And I had this amazing village, which not everybody does, and just like a really great preschool and a really great babysitter and grandparents who were willing to babysit and pick up. And my husband is a teacher and he did the majority of the moving and the baths and the dinners and all that. But it didn't quiet my feeling of being less than. It just impacted it further that all of these people got to experience my kids and do all of these things with them. And I was nothing more than like the train conductor making it happen.
Very relatable. Very relatable. I hear it. If I say the word self-judgment, what comes up for you if I were to say self-judgment out of curiosity?
My therapist space, Jay.
I hear you because it's a common thing. I feel the same from my lens is that being high performers or identifying as that achiever and then having an identity as a high achiever over here in media or in whatever business you're in. And then you're going to be a high achiever as a parent, which means you're probably pretty present, but you're not present and you're feeling guilt and shame. And then you go to your business and you're like, man, I'm leaving earlier than I'm used to. And now I'm feeling some guilt about that. And I'm feeling a little bit of judgment from eyeball side person over there. Right. You know, so all this stuff's happening and my identity is diverging. Yes. So yeah, I'm with you. And then Dylan comes along and it's even intensified. I'm missing him. I'm Cat Stevens' song. I'm missing my kids. And then that song makes me cry every time. So what happened next?
You know, so I'm like, okay, I have to figure this out. I have to somehow get out of Manhattan because I'm not going to move my family into Manhattan. My husband, excuse me, is a teacher in New Jersey. So like, I got to figure this out. So I like start applying to marketing jobs all over the state. And I went to apply to things that I thought were completely relevant based on my experience and my schooling. I applied to a bunch of jobs on the product side of all the brands I had interfaced with in media. I applied to be an adjunct professor of marketing. There's like a ton of universities and colleges in New Jersey. I had my MBA. I had experience to share. And I applied to this company that was advertising this little red bird on all the transit options into and out of Manhattan. And it was all about skipping the commute and coming to work for a big company right in your own backyard. And to be quite transparent, Matt, like most of my efforts completely bombed. The keyword scraping technology that we're all sort of subject to didn't make the connection that, oh, it's not the exact same job title and the exact same bullets that I would put in a job description, but the skills are completely transferable.
Yes. Okay.
But somehow this little red bird company, this little red bird company sees me and the recruiter for whatever reason decides she's going to take a chance on me. So she calls me up and we have this amazing conversation. She tells me, I love you and I think you're amazing, but you're never going to get the job that you applied for.
Whoa,
so I have to find another job that someone's going to want your skill set and see the connection and the connective tissue between what you've done and what they need you to do. This woman had me on interviews. 7 interviews over the course of a year. Didn't get one job. So then she calls me and she says, I don't know. This is a little bit of a long shot. We just hired this woman by the name of Jen Ravalli. And we are having her lead the new product marketing function. And I think that when I listen to you talk and when I listen to her talk, you guys would just really mesh. So I'd like you to meet her. So I get on the phone with Jen. We have this incredible conversation and she took a shot on me. She didn't really care about the bullets on my resume. She liked the awards I had won. She liked the programs I created. She thought it was impressive how fast I had climbed the media ladder. And so she offered me the job. And quite honestly, Matt, that woman in that moment transformed my life because this was like the first time ever I could be the two people at once. I was close enough to be home, get the kids on the bus, home for dinner. I didn't have to choose. I could be a mom and I could be the marketing powerhouse and like overachiever that in my bones to be, you know? And I couldn't be more grateful for her. She changed the trajectory of my life. She sort of saw this beauty in the fact that I was two people versus seeing it as a weakness or something that I had to hide, really.
Yes. Michelle, if you take us back to that day, take us back to the day that you and Jen had the final conversation where you received an offer, accepted an offer. What was that conversation and that feeling that you had that day? What was that like?
I mean, she was sort of amazed of all of the interviews I had been on. And she was like, why have you stuck with this? Like, we've had you interview for all these jobs and you haven't gotten any. And I was like, really, more than anything, I need to work for this company. It's in my backyard. And she said to me, I can't believe that no one hired you because you have this amazing set of skills. And I was like, yes, but I can't, as everyone's saying, jump into the job and start the job running and then give me no training. And she was like, I believe that if I bring you in, I could have you up and running within 30 days and like great by 90. I'm not worried about that. She was like, awesome. You're a best learner. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank you so, so much. She hired me, had a great experience. We worked together at two companies after that. We met Jason, who you mentioned, at the second, and now we're together. I don't know. It's just incredible. I feel like had I not met Jen, I don't necessarily know where I'd be because today I'm healthy. I'm a mom. I'm a VP of marketing, which is something I like always aspired to be. I have an incredible network of people I've worked with. I own my own consultancy. I don't know. I feel like people need to find a Jen, someone that believes that you don't have to be just one thing, that you're like this mosaic that's beautiful of like all the little things that make you you. And you just, you don't have to choose. You can be your whole self. I don't know. That's my story. And it's interesting because, you know, you meet people along the way, you meet people like Jen who change your life in such a good way. And then you also meet adversaries that contribute to that cycle of depression. And that's a scary place to be, but I'm thankful to have overcome it.
Well, where I sit right now, hearing your story, it feels like one that's very relatable because a lot of people out there have an identity shift when they have children. And then when they are known as high performers and maybe they have a little bit of perfectionist in them, they struggle with the idea of now I have a couple of different identities merged into one. It's awesome to see that you had enough patience with yourself. You and your husband decided that enough patience. It took a while to find this nice role, but you eventually found it. And now you're absolutely thriving. And all it took was, well, all it took, not that it's easy, but all it took was a little bit of grit and a little bit of patience and a little bit of maybe of dealing with the uncertainty. And now you're absolutely thriving with your consultancy, with the head of marketing, with all kinds of stuff. So it's possible. You know, our show is about hope, and you are a sterling example of it's possible.
It is possible. It is possible. You need people around you who believe in you. I mean, there were many days during that depressive state where I didn't believe in myself. Work was not going great. And my husband, I mean, he really took the lead in all things. He took the lead in being my champion and making sure that I was getting proper rest and medication and meeting all my therapy appointments and took the lead with our kids and was really supportive in a way that when you take those vows and you're super young, you're not really sure someone's going to like show up and take you for worse. You hope, but you don't know. And he totally did. I think that that was really critical too, because I wasn't alone in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, if you had the opportunity to share, first of all, I'd love to hear, can you tell us like just a quick, what's the origin story of you and your husband? Sounds like a pretty amazing human being here. I mean, how did you guys first meet?
It's actually rather random. So for a long time, my dad had this best friend at work, Kurt. Kurt and Debbie, his wife, would be at my parents' house and my parents would be at Kurt and Debbie's house. And Justin happens to be Kurt's son. Justin is my husband. Yes. And so for summers over college, Justin worked with my dad and Kurt. They both drove trucks for Drake's Bakeries. Okay. So they delivered devil dogs and yodels, and they were like the on the ground.
Devil dogs. Uh-oh. That's, you're triggering over here. That's my wife's favorite thing when we're up in the Northeast, get the devil dogs. So yes. Right? Yes. Yes.
So Justin worked there during college. He loaded the trucks, and every day my dad would come home and be like, you got to meet Justin. And I'm like, Dad, I'm not meeting Curtis's son. This went on for like, I'm not kidding you, Matt, like 7 years. So fast forward, I live in Manhattan, super early in my career. I live in Manhattan, 6'4" walk up, not a great neighborhood, and a crane falls on my building.
Oh, what? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, literally cuts the building in half, demolishes the building next to us. Like, a woman dies, all of these things. It's terrible tragedy.
Were you in the building when that happened?
No. I happened to be at home visiting my parents and like saw it on TV.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, crazy. So now I like go home. It was this weird time at the job I was at. There was a lot of people leaving because there was this change in management. And I go home and my mom is this like incredibly loving, overbearing, like guilt dripping Italian woman.
Yes.
Today, right? I'm like coming home from Manhattan. It's really far commute to my parents' house, but I don't have enough money to like wait until the city declares that my building's been completely unlivable because they're holding my first month's rent, my last month's rent. I'm so poor. So I'm living at my parents and my mom is every day, like I'm just getting off the bus trying to like put all my stuff down. My dad's like yelling, what do you want to drink for dinner? And like, my mom's like, sit down and eat. And I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom. Like, I just got here. And the phone would ring and like at night, who's on the phone? And did you brush your teeth? Did you get ready for the thing? What time is your alarm going off tomorrow? It was like, all of a sudden it was 15 again, right?
Yes.
On my own. And so like one night I had this horrible day at work and I'm sitting at the dinner table and my dad goes, oh, I wanted to tell you, Justin broke up with his girlfriend.
Oh, Dad, the matchmaker. Nice. Nice.
I just start crying in my macaroni. And I'm like, yeah, sure, Dad. Mommy asked me if I brush my teeth. Like, I live at home. My job's falling apart. My green thing in my building. Fine. I'll meet Justin. So, we met and we've been together ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We met, our first date, we went to a bar on the beach in Jersey. They had this amazing cover band and we were both really into cover bands. It was just a great night and we've literally been together ever since.
Heck yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
What a cool story. Okay. Well, thank you for the origin story of Justin. And of course, just wanted to put something in there to honor him after this great story you've shared. You've shared some challenges. You shared the challenge of depression, of working through your identity and then shifting to the success you have in your career now. So I'd love to ask, what are the things that are driving you that you're most passionate about now in your life, Michelle?
One of the things I'm most passionate about is trying to have my kids understand better how lucky they are. Justin and I both grew up in a really blue-collar scenario and parents worked really hard to provide as much as they could, but my kids have so much more and they don't realize that. So I've done a couple things to try and get them to understand how important that is. I started a food drive for Thanksgiving in my neighborhood that is run entirely besides myself, all by kids. So it's all the kids in the neighborhood. We do a Christmas gifting scenario where we take a child who is part of this local charity for kids who have cancer. And we give them and whatever siblings they have the holiday morning of their dreams. So we raise all the money, then we do the shopping, we do the wrapping, and then we deliver everything so the parents don't have to worry. So I'm just trying to pass on to my kids that if you have more, you have to be the person that stands up and like cares for those who have less.
Wow. And you're modeling it too by doing and involving them with it. I so respect that. I love that.
I'm trying. Yeah.
Well, you're doing more than many and appreciate you for that. How about professionally? What's inspiring or challenging for you now professionally, Michelle?
You know, it's interesting. When you're more junior in your career, you're sort of bringing other people's dreams to life. Somebody else came up with a strategy. Somebody else came up with the idea. And what's cool about where I am now and the level I've reached is it's me in there developing the idea, developing the strategy. And that's not to say that I do it alone because Jason and I are incredible partners. Jen and I were incredible partners. And there's many other people in that like field that have contributed incredible ideas to the ultimate strategy, but I'm in there and I'm building it. And when it comes to like seeing it at an event come to life or in a promotional campaign or something like that, it just sort of feels so like, I don't know, it's a little bit your baby. I mean, it's not a Lily or a Dylan, but it's this piece of you that you put so much into and you get to see. And for me, that's been the coolest part of ascending the marketing ladder, is bringing your own ideas to life.
Bring your own ideas. If I had to ask you, is there a certain style you have in the way that you mentor others? Like, you're so grateful for the relationship with Jen. I wonder, is there just a certain style or the way that you operate to mentor and guide people that you're developing right now?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So I would say you have all of these bosses or managers or leaders throughout your career, right? And sometimes you're always putting on the different hats. But I think Jen has one of the most amazing things that I've ever seen in a female leader, which is the idea of lifting as you rise. I've had other female leaders who felt like they had to hold their space in the world, that there wasn't more room for all of us to be there. And what Jen really just is live or die by is this idea of lifting as you rise, that you're only as good as like the people you're bringing up behind you. And for me, I'm trying to give my team that same level. With Jason, there's sort of this different piece. So Jason, I feel like, is probably the most direct and honest leader I've ever had. And for me, that works really well because I'm never second guessing where I stand. I'm never feeling like, I don't really know. Does he like it? Does he not like it? Was that my fault? Was that not my fault? So I try really hard to take those two influences, which I think have been the biggest, and incorporate them into the people that I'm trying to lift.
Awesome. I appreciate the lifting as you rise and helping people around you. And you're only as good as the people that you're lifting around you. So helping elevate them, and they're helping elevate you. So appreciate all of this. I would ask, where might we find you? If I wanted to go down the rabbit hole and connect with you on social media or somewhere, then where are the places that I might learn more and connect with Michelle Meehan?
So I'm really only active on LinkedIn, and I'm Michelle Meehan, I think MBA. And there's a picture of me in like a black suit that was taken by an amazing photographer who shoots covers at one of the media companies I work for.
Yes.
And I'm on Facebook, but full disclosure, I don't post or anything. I'm just there to follow the school menus for breakfast and lunch. And the thing I missed in the very buried emails the school district sends out that the PTA reposts.
Fair. Okay. Got it. Well, this has been fantastic to chat today and to hear like a real life story, a real human actually talk real about the identity collision that happens when you become a parent and you're a high achiever. So this has been incredibly insightful and we much appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, you're most welcome. I would ask Michelle, is there any advice or tip you might offer to, it could be mom, it could be a dad, but someone who is in a place where you used to be. They're a high achiever and they've now had a family and they feel this guilt and it's a tough place for them. Any thought or tip you might have for a person in that position?
I kind of feel like there's more than one thing I would say. So the first is, I think you need to find someone that you report to who is supportive of that, right? So I had taken a job once with nothing but women who were all mothers, thinking like, oh my gosh, this is going to be like incredible because we're like this society of people all experiencing the same things, right?
Yes.
Instead, it was kind of like whoever could do the better job pretending they weren't a mom and didn't have kids and didn't have these familial responsibilities was the one who did the best. And so you need to find someone that accepts you for your whole self. And that, I mean, to my story of a year of interviewing is not going to be the easiest thing, but it is going to be the most rewarding because once you have that, it's like you're never going to let it go. You can't go back. But the other thing I would say is, and this is something I think my therapist is saying for me to say, which I still struggle to believe and work on, is you're doing a much better job than you think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And with that, we can drop the mic because I think that's really it, is that we are doing better than we think. And high achievers tend to be very critical of self in many cases. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're farther than we might want to be. We're closer than we think. And you're doing better than you think. So good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, this has been fantastic. Let me advance us to the lightning round, ding, 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 to start to wrap up with a couple of last questions here, Michelle.
Yeah.
I have loved your energy today. It's very contagious. So let's stick with energy for a second here. You mentioned cover bands. If there is a band or a genre or a song, anything around music that really just lights you up and inspires you, what might be like one or two musical references or musical places that get you going?
So if we're talking exclusively cover bands, there's a few songs that are going to like totally get me out of my feet. One is Pour Some Sugar on Me, because who doesn't want to dance along to that song? The second one.
You just dated yourself. I didn't realize we're the same age, because that was the first cassette tape I ever bought after the do-over of Michael Jackson's Bad. I'm not going to talk about. But yeah, love it. Awesome.
Yeah, you have to. And then I'm a Jersey girl, right? So anybody that's going to play Bon Jovi or The Boss, I'm totally in.
Awesome. Yeah, you're hitting our Spotify favorites for Puzzle Night and Boggle Night. So this is awesome. Good. Well, let's go to books then. If you're a reader and you have a recommendation, one, two, maybe three books at most, what is it you might recommend as a book that's inspired you in some way?
Yeah, so I am a book reader. Inspiring, I think, two things. I'm going to say something that you're actually going to laugh at me about, but Harry Potter.
I won't laugh at you at all, because I love Harry Potter. Okay.
Go ahead. It's an amazing story, right? Because it's this person who really has had nothing good in his life to start. And yet he still feels like he should fight for better. And he should not just fight for himself, but like the betterment of all. And I think even though it's a younger story, there's so much good there. There's so much good. I also really am a big fan of Move Fast, Break Shit, Burn Out. It's a book written by Tracy Lovejoy and Shannon Lucas about being a catalyst. A lot of us overachievers are actually catalysts who are misunderstood, and really incredible validation of self, if you will.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And finally, I would say Untamed by Glennon Doyle. It's sort of this revelation of all she's gone through in her life, be it addiction, depression, anxiety, identity crisis. And what I love is there's sort of these two main points that really resonate with me. The first is, if you think you can't, just do the next best thing. Taking that long road approach and saying like, okay, I'm not going to like look all the way at that. I'm just going to do the next best thing I can do and just get from moment to moment. And then she also has this thing, and she actually has a podcast about it with her wife and her sister, called We Can Do Hard Things. And it's all about the fact that you can get through if you just keep going through.
I love it. I love it. I say this to my girls frequently. You can do hard things. They've got a Wonder Woman. She can do it, like a big poster up here on the wall about this. So I love it that you've shared these things. This is awesome. Okay. Well, then let's take it to the wrap up then. I'll give you the final word here, Michelle. Okay. And the question is, this is the Eternal Optimist podcast. So when I say the words eternal optimism, eternal optimist, what does that mean to you?
I think the eternal optimist is always doing the next best thing, because if you do that, you'll set yourself up for a road of feeling not only optimistic, but fulfilled.